that one back to the beginning. That's about the 10th slide. That's it. And I can at least start there. Now, a bit of a health notice too at the beginning. I've got a bit of a creaky throat, so hopefully it'll last the morning. But I did test negative this morning for COVID, so there's a little bit of safety involved in where we are today. And now, as has already been said a number of times, we're beginning the first of our series in Advent. And so today's service and today's message is part of that, and it's titled There's Room for Every Story. And we're going to be covering a couple of different passages this morning as we look at what we're doing today. On a recent trip down to Stewart Island or Rakiura to tramp the Rakiura track with some people from here and some others, at one point we were in a waiting shed to get a ferry back from Olver Island, and and amongst some of the historical pictures, there was this mutton bird bush leaf that had been used as a postcard. This was apparently quite a common occurrence, and in fact, the boarding pass for the ferry that we were on was also one of these mutton bird bush leaves that they'd written on. But what intrigued me particularly was the name on the leaf. This was addressed to a Miss Edie Rout. And you might not read it, but it says, Miss Edie Rout, Invercargill. So back in whenever it was, 1906, there probably weren't a lot of people in Invercargill, and no doubt this actually got to the person. And then it says, Mother and Dad, I send heaps of love. Hope you're a good little girl. Loves and kisses. But what really intrigued me was my grandparents were Routes, and they spent some time in Invercargill, and I've got some relatives down there. So this letter was probably written to one of my relatives at some stage somewhere in my history. While we're in Stewart Island, I took a trip up a little side road, and there's an old batch there, one of the first that was built, and it was built by another relative of mine, this time surname of Squires, who was my grandmother's maiden name. And I find in this small island at the bottom of New Zealand, there's some history of part of who I am. Something about me and my background that is identified in that island. And today, as we begin our series on Advent, leading up to the celebration of the birth of Jesus, we have two Bible verses to reflect on, as I mentioned. And the first of these is the genealogy of Jesus, as found in Matthew at the beginning of this gospel. Might not read all of it, but we'll see. So it's from Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. An account of the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, son of David, son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, and Judah the father of Perez, and Zerah and Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Aram, and Aram the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab the father of Nahshon, and Nahshon the father of Salmon, and Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab, and Boaz, the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed, the king of Jesse, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. And then it goes on and gives some other names coming up towards the end. But perhaps we'll just pick up at verse 16 again. And Jacob, finally getting towards the end, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and of whom Jesus was born, who was called the Messiah. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations, and from David to the deportation to Babylon, 14 generations, and from the deportation to Babylon to the Messiah, another 14 generations. Now, if you're like me, you probably don't read genealogies much, and when you come to bits like this in the Bible, quite inclined to actually miss out all the bits in between because it gets rather boring as to who was the father of who and everything else, and what does it matter anyway. But you see, Matthew was writing for a particular reason, and he was going to establish some things. But as we look at genealogies, you may also be aware that there's another one in the New Testament, and Dr. Luke has also got a genealogy there in the beginning of his one. But there are some quite significant differences in the two genealogies. Matthew goes back as far as Abraham. Luke goes all the way back to Adam. And the two, from David through to Christ, through to Jesus, have actually quite different names. So how can we have two different genealogies coming through? And there's some quite good evidence that Luke, in fact, is providing a genealogy through Mary rather than through Joseph. And there's some all sorts of stuff going on about that. And as you have a look in Luke, and if you want to read the genealogy there, the whole wording he uses around when it comes to who Jesus was would indicate that that could be a possibility. But I don't really want to go into that this morning, just to say that there are some really good sound reasons as to why these genealogies are different. But when reading them both, you can also see there's two different, quite different styles in the way that they write too. Matthew's words are written much more for effect. They're sort of like a staged event. Matthew's gospel is orientated towards the Jewish people, the Jewish readers, and he employs sort of certain techniques to try and emphasize rather than perhaps as we would understand it to be a precisely accurate record. So so it's created for impact, but he also breaks his genealogy into those three groups of people, 14 generations between Abram to David, from David to when they left to Babylon, and then on to Jesus again. And the number 14 was quite sort of significant in a number of different ways. One could have just been a way of remembering things, but also in Hebrew, the numerical value of the letters of King David also add up to 14. You see, he was trying to build a picture as to what was going on. Matthew also identifies key players in Jewish history with stories that would be familiar. But one of the things he does, which is quite unusual for a genealogy in Hebrew times particularly, is that he includes four women in there. He identified Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. And as I said, this is quite unusual for a Hebrew genealogy. But it seems that Matthew wanted to highlight that some of the irregular, perhaps even scandalous relationships of the past were woven into the history of who Jesus was. And these four women were creative and eventful and took charge of certain situations that enabled them and their offspring to be part of the royal line. So it was significant for Matthew to identify that these four women had a significant place in the history of who Jesus was. One commentator describes Matthew's gospel as being directed to Jewish audience seeking liberation, political liberation and spiritual empowerment during a time of oppression. And so that's who Matthew was writing to. He was writing this genealogy, not to be precise as we would understand it, but to create a story of who Jesus was that his readers would remember, and that was significant for what was going on. And in a sense, all four Gospels begin their stories by building a picture of who Jesus is. Matthew, as we've said here, with his focus on the Jewish Messiah, the son of David. Mark begins his by looking at the fulfillment of some of the Old Testament prophecies. And Luke provides us perhaps the most thorough of the stories, the human story around Jesus' birth, and talks about some of the relationships and the relations that were going on at the time. And of course, he was writing to Greeks. And then John, quite different again. He begins his gospel, the Word. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, one with God. He started right into the divinity of who Jesus was. But the message this morning, or the passage that we're looking at this morning, is focusing in on the humanity of Jesus, of who Jesus was as a person. And so it begins by building a story of that that was important for the hearers to know, that Jesus, the Messiah, was the son of David, the son of Abraham. He may well have done. Yes, and that's why he used terminology and words that would be memorable. So, what, and then finally, obviously, he wanted to establish Jesus as of the royal line, and that was most important for Matthew's message. But what about us? What makes me who I am, or you who you are? For many in our sort of part of our Western society, our perspective here anyway, I think our identity has slipped into what we do rather than who we are. And then sometimes what we do has been narrowed down even further into only certain things like what we're studying or what we do for our employment, what our career is. And somehow my identity becomes aligned with my job or my education or the career I've chosen. Nearly 2.5-3 years ago, I was made redundant from the role that I've had for nearly 20 years. And whilst the beginning of that time, it was quite a relief, I was been pretty stressful at the end of that employment time. As time went on and I wasn't employed, some of those conversations when you meet people and they go, what do you do? What do? Well, I do nothing. Well, no, not quite. I was doing all sorts of stuff, but it wasn't employment. It wasn't in a job. And I had to relearn that whilst jobs are important and they have a huge value in the things that we do, they shouldn't define me. They shouldn't define us. Now, unfortunately, I don't know enough te reo to give you my mihi mihi. But if I could, it would establish my identity somewhat differently than what I do. It would be based on a series of relationships and connections. Said I'd try and remember to put the things up, and I'm not doing too well, am I? But anyway, those who have gone before me, my ancestors, it would talk about my ancestors. Perhaps it would talk about Edie Rout from Stewart Island or from Invercargill. It would talk about those who are around me now, my whānau, my family, my wife, my kids, my enlarged family. It would talk about the wider community that I'm a part of, the tribe I belong to, or the people group I'm part of. It would talk about those who are around me supporting me. But it would also talk about the places that I belong, the place that I belong. It might talk about the land or a mountain or a river. It would identify me through the connections I have with people and places. And this whakapapa, this genealogy, has a depth and a breadth that goes way beyond only the things I do. It weaves into it all the relationships that I have and the connections I have with those around me. And it's far more stable and far more powerful than simply what I do for a living. And so it's built around relationships and connections. Now, some things I've certainly inherited through my bloodline. Probably the way that my hair recedes and the colours that it's changing. Things like that obviously are part of my bloodline. Perhaps even some of the interests and skills that I have. But I'm also a product of the environment that I've been in and the way that I've been brought up and the people that have been around me. And a lot of people far more well-studied and more qualified than me can talk about the differences in nurture and nature and where they fall. But all I want to say this morning is that we're made up of both. We have both of those things that go to make up who we are. But there's more. Not only have I got all of this going on, but I'm also a child of God. You see, like Jesus, my royal line is not a bloodline, but it's one of adoption. John 1, verses 12 and 13 put it like this: yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children not of natural descent, nor of human decision or of a husband's will, but born of God. Romans 8, for you did not receive a spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you received the spirit of adoption. When we cry, Abba, Father, it is that very spirit bearing witness with our spirits that we are children of God. Now, we each have a backstory. a history, a past. Some of our stories are quite painful, confusing. We may be able to trace our family tree back many generations, or we may not even know who our birth parents are. But one thing is certain, that God reached out, and through Jesus, we have been offered the dignity and the heritage of being accepted into his family. You are a child of God. I'd like to read a poem. It's called Donkey Expression. The donkey who lives in the field behind the village green wakes me most mornings with explosions of melancholic laughter. He nuzzles close to the fence as I walk by on the footpath, with that look in his eye that most of us show only in our unguarded moments. Am I lovable? Have you got anything for me? Please don't hurt me. Will you be my friend? We have a place. We have a place with each other, and we have a place as a child of God. And that gives us dignity and hope and a sense of purpose in who we are. Our second series of verses this morning come from Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 to 15. The word that Isaiah, son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Now, those who may have been here through the series and the sermon on Micah may find this reading rather familiar, as it's nearly identical to what we read in Micah chapter 4. The words are almost exactly the same. It's not entirely clear who spoke these words first, because Micah was actually prophesied during the same period or overlapping the same period that Isaiah did, but could even have been somebody else at the time that they reflected on. But regardless, the message of hope is the same. And it's really important for us. I'm not going to spend too much time, because we've recently covered this quite thoroughly when we looked at Micah. But I do want to just do a quick reminder of the key parts of that. The times were difficult. The nation had fallen into well short of living up to what God's expectations and purposes were. There was greed, corruption, violence, anger, hurt. All those things were a reality for their existence. And they were about to be taken over by one of the surrounding nations. So in this, to this sense of despair, comes the reminder that things would not be this way forever. There was coming a time when God will be exalted. And it wasn't just to be a thing of Judah, it was going to be a thing for the whole nations. The whole purpose that Abraham had brought about, had been brought about through Abraham at the beginning, where his descendants were going to be a blessing to all nations, is reiterated once again here, as it is through many prophets. But also God's wisdom will be sought and followed. People will come to try and seek the wisdom of God, not because they're made to, but because they have an inner drive to do so, and that they would be followers of that. That justice will prevail, and that peace will be established. And in response to this, Isaiah urges us here, as in verse 5, to walk in the light of the Lord. Not only were they to look forward and hope for the future because of what God would accomplish, but they were to walk well in the present with him. His contemporary Micah would say this: to love mercy and to walk humbly with his God. So, as we begin this Advent season, as we look forward to Christmas and all that that means, I think there are three, well, to me anyway, there were three key challenges or messages from these two readings this morning. And the first is to reflect. To reflect on those who have positively contributed to who you are now, to those who are part of your story. Whether it might be family, it might be friends, could be anybody really. But those that have made an impact into your life, and if you can, tell them about it. You see, we each have significant people who have built into our lives to make us who we are today. Think of what they've done for you, the things that they've said, the things that they've been, and be thankful to God for people like that. We aren't here simply because of ourselves. We're here because of the community around us. And secondly, be. I think we need to learn to appreciate who we are and who we are. Our strengths, the things that bring us joy, the things that bring us sorrow. Now, I'm quite different to you, and you're quite different to me, but it's that diversity that brings strength and it brings completeness into our communities, also into us as the family of God. So I need to bring who I am, and you need to bring who you are. You see, we need each other, but we don't need to be the same. And it's really easy to look at others and want to be like them and have the things that they've got or to all those sorts of things, but God says, I love you, and you have a place, and you have skills and all those sorts of things, so we need to learn to be who we are and then to bring who we are into the communities and into the relationships that we have. And then finally, to do. Now today we've just focused on, as I said at the beginning, the human heritage of Jesus. But of course there was also the fact that he was divine and that he would go on to split history through the things that he does. And we'll be looking at more aspects of that in the coming weeks. But Jesus came into this world with a purpose to fulfill, and he asks us to be part of this purpose. Now, while I can't change what's happening in the Ukraine or Iran or Ethiopia, perhaps I can make a difference to the individual lives that I come across through the way that I speak, the way that I act, and the way I manage the resources that God has entrusted to me. And you know, when enough of us do that, then real change begins to take place. Do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. I'd like to close by this part of it by reading a prayer from the daily reading of a guy who I can't pronounce his name. Padre O'Tuama. He's an Irish person who works in the peace movement. Anyway, the reading for, and this is yesterday's daily prayer. And the reading is from John 14. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. And then this is the prayer. Jesus, you shared peace around a table of anxiety. Peace with the bread, peace with the wine. Peace in the face of the uncertain, peace in the face of pain. May we share tables of peace in places of pain, sharing food and friendship and words of life. Because you came to a fearful world and found your place around those tables. Amen. Thank you. I believe I hand back to the worship team. And remember what Jesus has done for you.
finish with that prayer for the church. Build your kingdom here. When I've got a music team.